Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 18, text 31. Esha kim nibrita shesha. Esha kim nibrita shesha. Karano militekshana. Karano militekshana. Mrissa samadir ahosvit. Mrissa samadir ahosvit. Kim nu syat chatrabandubi. Kim nu syat chatrabandubi. Esha kim nibrita shesha. Karanon militekshana. Mrissa samadir ahosvit. Kim nu syat chatrabandubi. Others? Vaishnavis. Esha, this. Kim, weather. Nibrita ashesha, meditative mood. Karana, senses. Milita, closed. Ikshana, eyes. Mrissa, false. Samadhi, trance. Aho, remains. Svit, if it is so. Kim, either. Nu, but. Syat, may be. Chatrabandhubi, by the lower Kshatriya. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Upon returning, he began to contemplate and argue within himself whether the sage had actually been in meditation, with senses concentrated and eyes closed, or whether he had just been feigning trance just to avoid receiving a lower kshatriya. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The king, being a devotee of the Lord, did not approve of his own action, and thus he began to wonder whether the sage was really in trance or was just pretending in order to avoid receiving the king, who is a kshatriya and therefore lower in rank. Repentance comes in the mind of a good soul, and as soon as he commits something wrong, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Jiva Goswami... Sorry, I read that wrong. Repentance comes in the mind of a good soul as soon as he commits something wrong, period. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Jiva Goswami do not believe that the king's action was due to his past misdeeds. The arrangement was so made by the Lord just to call the king back home, back to Godhead. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the plan was made by the will of the Lord, and by the will of the Lord, the situation of frustration was created. The plan was that for his so-called misdeed, the king could be cursed by an inexperienced Brahmana boy infected by the influence of Kali, and thus the king would leave his hearth and home for good. His connections with Srila Sukadeva Goswami would enable the presentation of the great Srimad Bhagavatam, which is considered to be the book incarnation of the Lord. This book incarnation of the Lord gives much fascinating information of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, like his Rasa Lila with the spiritual cowherd damsels of Brajabhumi. This specific pastime of the Lord has a special significance because anyone who properly learns about this particular pastime of the Lord will certainly be dissuaded from mundane sex desire and be placed on the path of sublime devotional service to the Lord. The pure devotee's mundane frustration is meant to elevate the devotee to a higher transcendental position. By placing Arjuna and the Pandavas in frustration due to the intrigue of their cousin brothers, the prelude of the Battle of Kurukshetra was created by the Lord. This was to incarnate the sound representative of the Lord, Bhagavad Gita. So by placing King Parikshit in an awkward position, the incarnation of Srimad Bhagavatam was created by the will of the Lord. Being distressed by hunger and thirst was only a show, because the king endured much, even in the womb of his mother. He was never disturbed by the glaring heat of the Brahmastra released by Ashvatthama. The king's distressed condition was certainly unprecedented. The devotees like Maharaj Parikshit are powerful enough to forbear such distresses. By the will of the Lord, they are never disturbed. The situation in this case was therefore all planned by the Lord. Om Aginata Madandasha Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayamrupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So we're hearing how things happen by the will of the Lord. And Prabhupada's giving us two very important examples here, how it was an arrangement of the Lord that Arjuna was in illusion, because he was actually an eternal associate of the Lord. But so by Krishna's arrangement, Arjuna was in illusion so that the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken. Okay? And also, it was by the arrangement or the will of the Lord that Maharaj Parikshit was covered by illusion, acted totally out of character when he was in that situation where he wasn't received by the sage, Samika Rishi. And by the will of the Lord, he was put into illusion. And two things happened as a result of that. Two things happened as a result of the first one, too. Arjuna became the hero, and the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. And two things happened in the second example. Maharaj Parikshit got to go back to Godhead. Krishna accelerated his program for going back to Godhead. And also, the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken. Okay? So that's how Krishna does things like that. By the will of the Lord, auspicious things are brought about, even though initially it might seem like it's not a good situation, but Krishna's got his plan. So actually, upon reading this, I felt like the same thing is happening now. The same thing is happening in our present day and age, that by the will of the Lord, the general human population is totally an illusion. People couldn't be practically more an illusion if they tried. Okay, but it's by the will of the Lord, and so what's going to happen? What's happening is that just like in those two examples that Prabhupada gives in this purport, they're pastimes. You could refer to them as pastimes of the Lord. A pastime of the Lord is taking place right before our own eyes right now, which is that because people are so much in darkness and in illusion, Krishna's made the arrangement for Prabhupada to come along and preach truth to ignorance, you know, which is actually, it might not sound like much, but it's a very dangerous program, very risky program. You know, historically speaking, people have been persecuted, tortured, and killed for speaking truth at the wrong place in the wrong time. So Prabhupada took a great risk by doing that. And even more than just speaking, Prabhupada produced these books. See? So the full pastime is that by Krishna's arrangement, the people are in big-time illusion all over the world. And Prabhupada came and took great risk to produce, to preach, and you know, write his books. So he's glorified and will be glorified more and more and more as time goes on. And the books he left, will be the device or the medium to save human society from completely plummeting into total darkness in animal life. And those of us who follow Prabhupada, we get an opportunity to participate in this pastime. We can participate in the pastime of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya by practicing Krishna, taking up Krishna consciousness, practicing it ourselves, and trying to share it with other people. We're participating in the pastime of the Lord. Actually, there's a place in the Chaitanya Charitamrita early on where it says the Sankirtan movement is a pastime of Lord Chaitanya. So we're getting a chance to participate in this pastime. The pastime is the pastime for saving human society, right? And simultaneously, by participating in that pastime, not only will human society be saved, but we go back to Godhead. You see? So it's an analogous situation. It's by the will of the Lord. It's an arrangement of Krishna. See? And we're sitting right on top of it. And we just have to now take advantage of it, understand it for what it is, and take advantage of it. I'm going to read you something interesting, just to give you elaborate upon this point about how people are really in darkness. Try to give an example of that. I'm going to read you something I researched and found on the internet. This is a statement, a description of the Christian worldview, given by a leading Christian theologian and philosopher, William Lane Craig. He's, you know, if not the top, he's one of the top, you know, authorities on this subject. Okay, so this is what he says, and this is accurate. And I'm reading this with respect. This is, you know, coming from somebody who's an authority on this tradition, and this is what they believe. Okay, so it says here, when a person dies, his body lies in the grave until the return of Christ. The souls of those who belong to Christ are drawn into a closer, more intimate fellowship with him. In this disembodied state, I'm going to skip a sentence there. The souls of unbelievers, by contrast, enter into a state of conscious torment and separation from God, which is called Hades. When Christ returns, he will bring with him the souls of the departed believers, and their remains will then be raised from the dead and transformed into glorious, powerful resurrection bodies, and their souls will be returned with their bodies. After appearing before the judgment seat of Christ for rewards, they will then be ushered into the new heavens and the new earth. Unbelievers will also be raised from the dead and reunited with their bodies. And then after being judged by God, they will be cast into hell. Okay? So that's what you just heard is what the Christians believe happens when you die. And that's what happens to a believer and what happens to a non-believer. Okay? And there's about 2 billion, approximately, Christians in the world. Okay? Now, aside from like philosophical arguments like, wow, that doesn't sound very consistent with the idea of a God that's all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-loving, or all-compassionate, it doesn't, you know, aside from that, it also doesn't jive with certain facts. I mean, from obviously from a Vedic perspective, we don't, you know, it's out of the question. But even from an empiric perspective, there is evidence. That there are people, you know, that reincarnation is something that exists. It's kids that remember their past lives. So, and from a tag team, from a combined perspective of the Vedic literatures, the Vedic perspective, and this empiric evidence that happens to support it, this couldn't possibly be true. You see? I think that's significant. But there's 2 billion people who nominally believe this. And it's like way out there. I mean, from a Vedic perspective, it's way out there. And then, as I said, if you take seriously the empiric evidence that supports the Vedic worldview on this point, it's really way out there. Now, I use the word nominally. That's an important word. And because despite the fact that I just said there are about 2 billion people who are Christians, and you know, officially, this is their worldview. This is what they believe. But a lot of them, and not just Christians, but this is actually very, very similar to the worldview of, you know, Judaism, depending upon which denomination you are, you know, whether you can Orthodox, Conservative, or Reform, Islam bears similarities to that. They all have this idea of that, you know, when you die, it's either heaven or hell kind of thing. There's no reincarnation. So, yeah, despite the fact that that's there, most of these people are nominal. And the word nominal means in name only. In other words, even the Christians today, or the Jews today, or for the most part, the Muslims today, they're nominal. Nominal means in name only, which means that it's a social identification. See? Nominalism is something like cancer. You can have it and not even know you got it. But one of the foremost symptoms, just like I guess the symptom of cancer is when you know you got cancer, you start feeling some pain someplace. And you go to a doctor and they say, well, actually, you got cancer. So the foremost visible symptom of nominalism is that the person who's a nominalist, he's not practicing what he's supposed to be believing in. And we see that's the case throughout the world. That most people, they might, if you ask them, what are you? What's your religion? They all say, I'm a this or that or this or that. But not everyone. Some are very sincerely practicing. But there are, for the most part, or a significant percentage of them are not practicing. They're nominalists. It's a name only. You see, they're not actually practicing what they're supposed to be believing in. Okay? And that's significant, too. What are they believing in? Well, most people actually are believing in, whether they realize it or not, and most of them don't consciously realize it because it's a worldview that's spread throughout human society in a very subtle, insidious kind of a way. But this is a description of what most people believe is about reality. Okay, despite the fact that they might be calling themselves this or that or this or that. Okay, and it goes something like this. That reality consists of teeny bits of solid, self-existent stuff moving in accordance with mathematical laws under the influence of fields of force. This is by a man named Ed Kelly. Ed Kelly, he's a scientist. He belonged, he's with, okay, thank you, yeah. He's a scientist. He's, one of these people with PhDs in physics, this, that, and the other thing, and he's about this particular individual, no, but about the work they're doing, it's mentioned in his books. It's referred to in his books. Okay? So, regardless of who he is, Judah Karma has, in classes he's given, presented these same ideas. This is a description of physicalism, and this is the default worldview of the vast majority of human society. I'll just finish it. So it says here that Reality consists of teeny bits of solid self-existent stuff moving in accordance with mathematical laws under the influence of fields of force, including our human minds and consciousness. Everything must emerge from that basic stuff. Our everyday understanding of ourselves as effective conscious agents equipped with free will is delusive because we are in fact nothing more than extremely complicated biological machines. Consciousness and its contents are generated by neurophysiological processes in the brain, and beliefs about postmortem survival common to the world's religious traditions are therefore also delusive. Biological death is necessarily the end, because without a functioning brain, there could be no mind and consciousness, period. On a more cosmic scale, there are no final causes, no transcendent order. The overall scheme of nature is utterly devoid and of meaning and purpose. So that's what most people are really, whether they know it or not, that's their worldview. Now, you could say, well, how could you say that? How could you say that? Well, reverse engineering is how I could say that. Now, as you can understand, by reverse engineering, you can understand what somebody's thinking, what they really believe in, and what's really important to them by the way they behave. You see? People can say anything, blah, 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 blah. Anything can come out of the mouth. But by the way a person behaves, by the way they conduct their lives, you can understand what their underlying beliefs are, what their belief system is. So from the way people are living today throughout the world, you know, engaging in illicit sex, meat-eating, intoxication, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You name it, they'll do it. If it feels good, do it. Actually, that's their motto, okay? And it's right on the, you know, caps. And if it feels good, do it. That's a total atheistic, you know, physicalist way of living life. That's, you know, the underlying mentality behind that is that. Okay, so point being that that's an example of what we're dealing with. The 99.99% of human society is in the deepest darkness of ignorance. You know, even Prabhupada made a comment like that one time. He was giving a class, and during the class, some hippie kind of started going crazy in the back or something like that. And Prabhupada kind of, not to the audience, but under his breath, he said, This is the darkness of ignorance. Something like that, you know. So Prabhupada was aware of that, okay? So which brings us back to the real important point of the class is that this is an arrangement by Krishna, you know. It's all an arrangement by Krishna. Kali Yuga is here. Kali Yuga people is the age where people are being given the facility for unrestricted sense gratification. But Krishna and Lord Chaitanya are so merciful that by their will, they've made this arrangement so that people who want to something else, people who want spiritual life, will get it, can get it, you know. And we're in a wonderful position because not only are we've already made the choice to take to spiritual life as given to us by Srila Prabhupada, but we're in a great position to be part of saving the rest of human society. And it's by distributing Prabhupada's books. We always say in classes that, you know, we have different programs for preaching Krishna consciousness, and that's a fact. There's prasadam distribution, there's Harinam, and there's college preaching, and there's, you know, and they're all important, and they all are just that important. But those of us who are here during the time when Prabhupada was here, we know that, you know, book distribution got a lot of emphasis. I mean, I don't want to say it's what's important, and it's more. It got a lot of emphasis. It was a really important, as Prabhupada saw it, as a really important part of his, you know, attempt to spread Krishna consciousness. Okay, and I think everybody would agree with that. Nobody would disagree with that. Okay. So on that note, I'd just like to add that, and it's actually very easy. It's not hard. It's a lot easier than everybody thinks, and a lot more devotees can do it and do it very, very successfully than what you might be thinking. And as I'm saying this, I'm talking to each and every individual in this room. Okay, my conviction is that anybody who's taken up this process, which means chanting, not as a nominalist, but as a real genuine practitioner, anybody who's chanting 16 rounds. following the four regulative principles and engaging in some of the, as much as possible, as much as their, you know, situation in the world allows them to, engaging in the devotional practices like, you know, coming to Mangalarti if you're able to, if you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You are totally qualified. You're totally, more than qualified, you're totally empowered to distribute Prabhupada's books. And you just need to know a few little things to help you from, prevent you from becoming discouraged, which I'm going to try to tell you right now. So you can go out and do it, and hopefully do it very successfully, because as I said, it's a lot easier than what you think. First thing is, you get out there, okay? You got to just be prepared to go out someplace. And there's something you have to realize, okay? That a lot of people are going to say no. A lot of people are not going to be interested. It doesn't matter if you've been distributing books for 1 minute, 1 hour, 1 day, 1 year, 1 lifetime. There's going to be a lot, such a noise, both and I, between the two of us, we got over 80 years of book distribution happening. And we get like at least, I don't know, 50% plus people saying no to us all day long. So people will say no. Don't let that ruffle your feathers. You have to, that just should be like, knowing that's the way it is. I can't think of the expression I'm looking for, but that's just the way it goes. You know, it's the nature of the beast that people are going to say no. So it should be just like water off a duck's back. And a very helpful way to galvanize your mind against being disturbed by that is to remember an amazing, wonderful example that His Grace Vaisheshika Prabhu has given in Sankirtan classes he's given, which is that we're actually just looking for the ripe fruit. It's such a valuable analogy. We're looking for the ripe fruit means that there's people out there that are just not ready. Well, here, I'll give you an example. I'll back up a little bit and I'll elaborate on this ripe fruit analogy or metaphor. When I was 18 years old, I went to Israel and I lived on a kibbutz for, you know, plus or minus 3 to 6 months. I can't remember. And my job was, you know, aside from trying to learn Hebrew, which I didn't, was picking grapefruits. Okay? That's what they had me doing on the kibbutz. I was picking grapefruits. And the first thing they taught us, you know, when all the grapefruit pickers, is that we want the ripe fruit. See? So in other words, don't pick unripe fruit. We don't want anything that's on the ground, forget it. If it's on the ground, forget it. Even if it's on the tree and it looks a little weird, forget it. We just want the ripe fruit. The ripe fruit was the fruit that it's up there, and it looks nice, it smells nice, and when you go like that, boop, it comes off. No struggle. If you have to go, no, we don't want it. That's unripe. Leave it. We'll get it later, you know. Just give us the ripe fruit. You know, they give me a big basket, and they say, fill this up with ripe fruit. Nothing off the ground, nothing that you got to, like, have a wrestling match with up in the tree. Just give us the ripe fruit. It's the same thing with when you go out on Sankirtan. Just be a fruit picker. Just think of that. Think of this example. You're going out there to pick the ripe fruit. Don't, if the people are like, you know, nah, let them go. They're the rotten fruit. I equate those with the rotten fruit. They're just not ready, or it's not this time around for them. Maybe they have to wait for the next life or whatever. But so just let them go, and don't let it disturb you. It's nothing to do with you. You haven't done anything wrong. It's not a disqualification. It's nothing to do with you. It's them. So just let them go. Then there's people who you'll stop, and they'll just kind of like they'll do everything they possibly can to squirm out of it. You know, to avoid taking a book and giving a donation. So same thing with them. Let them go, and that, without resentment. You know, it's very polite and very friendly to the rotten fruit. Pardon, you know, I don't mean to insult anybody, but to that category and the other category. Thank you very much for stopping. It's a pleasure meeting you. Thank you very much for stopping. Here, would you like a free book? Off they go. Don't spend minimal amount of time with them. Okay. Then there's going to be people. And these are the ones you're interested in, the ripe fruit. When we do a table. We distribute books from a table, okay? As we found that that's the most, by far, the most effective, and it's the way that presents us in the best way. Because, you know, you look respectable. Everybody tables. You know, and people are generally more, they're more relaxed. They feel more comfortable, you know, talking to somebody who is at a table as opposed to just stopping for somebody just walking around willy-nilly and stopping people, you know. So we do that. And there's people who, they just come up. The walk-ups, we call them, you know. And they just walk right up. They're your super ripe fruit. You know, and not only will they walk up, sometimes they'll even walk up with a big smile on their face. Honest, it happens like that. You're just standing there with your books, and these people come. They just see the table. We don't, even if there's no sign up, they know, that's what I'm looking for, right? And they just walk right up with a big smile on their face. And with those people, you just relax, you know, just say, hey, thank you so much for coming over. Please have these books. You just, you know, give them a whole bunch of books and then just say, you know, we don't sell these. People give a donation. And they go, oh, sure, yeah, yeah, I'd love to give a donation. And then you just, you know, depending upon, you just kind of size it up, how many from looking at the person and, you know, getting the feel for them. And then you just kind of, if you have like a, we use our cell phones to take credit cards. So you can show them a number. You could say, a lot of people give this amount for the books. Is that okay? And a lot of times they'll just go, and you just swipe it, and that's done. You could give them like, I mean, right on regular, half a dozen times a day, at least we're giving people a whole stack of books. And they just, you know, they agree. And they might go, ooh, that's a bit much. And then you go, okay, well actually, yeah, is that okay? And you may shove them half that amount and like that. So those are the ripe fruit. Those are the super ripe fruit. Then there's other people who, they won't just come, you know, you have to stop them. They're not just walking up to the table with a big smile. But when you approach them, and, you know, you use your line. I use a very simple line. We're at schools all the time, so I say to people, I say, excuse me, are you a student? Do you also go here? And they say, yeah. And I say, well, I say, what's your major? And they say, whatever. And I say, for real? Like, I'm really interested. You know, like, I'm really, that's really, wow. Chemistry. I say, for real? And they go, yeah. I say, come on over. And then you just turn your back on them, and you run back over to your table. Like something exciting's happening. You know, you got to make it seem like it's, hey, something far out's happening here, you know. They don't want to miss out on this. So you run, and then they follow you. 9 times out of 10, they just follow you right up to the table. And then you do the same thing. You just hand them the books, you say whatever, which I say practically nothing. And then you just ask for a donation. So the point is that those are the ripe fruit, take books, and they happily, without, you don't have to manipulate them, you don't have to, it's not like a whole, you don't have to preach to them much. It's not really the place to preach very much. You know, actually, if you try to preach too much, people get turned off. Actually, it's kind of like better not to, because they have a limited amount of time. You got to keep it short. It's not the place, you know, for a Bhagavatam class. So you just kind of quickly give them the book, say maybe one thing about it to just try to, you know, interest them, and then ask for a donation. And then pretty much whatever they give, that's fine. You know, we don't wrangle, try to, you know, kind of get them to give more and that they're uncomfortable with. And then just give them, let them take whatever books they like. And at the end of the day, we're finding that it all works out. You always have enough, even if you're just letting people take as many books as they want, which pretty much that's what I do, you know. At the end of the day, by that method I'm just described here, there's more than enough Lakshmi to cover it. So, once again, the point is that, I know I've been doing this for a long time, but it's every day I keep getting the same thing. There's nothing to this. Anybody could do it. Satya Denori, what's your opinion? Do you think, is it very difficult? He's shaking his head, no, it's not. So, you know, so I'm just saying this to encourage anybody, if you have even a slight attraction or, you know, the thought came into your mind, maybe I'd like to try that. Try it. You'd be pleasantly surprised. You might be very pleasantly surprised at what you experience. It's not that difficult. And so, the reason I'm kind of belaboring this point, almost so to speak, is that, as I said, to my vision, this is a very significant part of this pastime of Lord Chaitanya, of Prabhupada, of Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, and Prabhupada, to save the fallen souls of the Kali Yuga. You know. Because these books, if people read them, at least there's no way somebody can read one of Prabhupada's books and not understand what the Krishna Conscious Movement is all about. Whether they'll accept it or not, whether they'll appreciate it and start putting it to practicing it in their life, that's totally another thing. But these books are really, Papa did a great job here. I mean, everybody knows the stories. You know, Papa, they asked Papa, why do you read your own books? And he said, because I didn't write these books. When I sit down to write these books, Krishna comes and tells me, dictates to me what to say. So you could say these books are written by God, you know. So there's no way people won't understand what we're all about, what we believe in, by reading these books. And they have potency. There's quite a bit of, you know, spiritual potency. So how many devotees here in this room became devotees? Let's rephrase the question. How many of you, by show of hands, became devotees and a book, reading one of Prabhupada's books, had a significant role to play in that? Practically everybody. You see, so the books are potent. The books are devotee makers. See? And, you know, as I said, we can be part of it. We can be part of it, getting those books out there. Especially here at this temple, we have a very we're very fortunate. We have a temple president that's, you know, simultaneously the North American BBT trustee. We have a lot of people who are helping him in his efforts to try to, you know, have book distribution go on a very large scale here. So we have a lot of facility. We have a lot of facility for book distribution. And so anyway, I'd like to encourage everybody to give it a go. We have the Prabhupada Marathon coming up in December. But even now, anybody who wants to, we could make arrangements so that they can go out there and have a, you know, give it a whirl and hopefully have a good experience. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Anything they'd like to say? Ananda Kirtan.
Krishna. In some places, Prabhupada would glorify Jesus Christ, and even some places, Prabhupada would glorify Jesus Christ, and even say, if you follow the Bible, you know, that's good. How do you answer when Christians say, they always bring that verse up, Jesus is the truth, the way, and the light. No one comes to the Father except through Him.
Well,
how do you answer that?
The way I answer it is that it was this book. It was written by a devotee, Satyaraj, I believe. It's a pamphlet. It's not a book. You mean that's in the Bible? And he quotes this thing from one of the, because the Bible is originally written in Greek or Aramaic or something. So he quotes from the original language that the phrase, the actual Greek or Aramaic, is pater apater. So a very strict literal translation of that phrase is, I am the way, the truth, the life. No one can go to the Father except through one of the Father. So I explain that to him, and I make the point that, yeah, we would agree with that, that you can only go to the Father through one of the Father. And we believe, we could accept that Jesus Christ was one of the Father, but he's not the only one of the Father. You see, so in that sense, we would try to negate that their claim to exclusivity. That he's not the only one. He's not the only one and only personality ever for all time that, you know, you can go through to get to God. Through one, pater a pater. You can go to God through one. You can approach the Father through one of the Father, a bona fide spiritual master. That's what I do. You know, that's how I respond to that. I don't try to disrespect, you know, because Prabhupada said Jesus Christ is such a great personality, the Son of God, the representative of God. He had no fault. So, you know, Prabhupada didn't find fault with Jesus Christ. But he did find fault with Christianity. So, and we also would find fault with Christianity. You know, we would say that so how could you say Jesus Christ is a great spiritual personality and, you know, criticize Christianity? And I would say to that, I'd say, well, because people are, you know, they're misrepresenting him. They're not actually following what he really taught. Did you have your hand up, Judah Karma, or are you just stretching your fingers there? Okay, just stretching your fingers. Yeah, so that's not how I would respond to that. Pater a pater. One can go to the Father through one of the Father. In other words, a bona fide spiritual master. And we'll accept that Jesus Christ was a bona fide spiritual master. But unfortunately, people don't follow him. They don't follow his instructions. They don't even know what they are, for the most part, because it's questionable whether what they have in the Bible today is really what Jesus Christ even taught in the first place. So, but that's another, you know, a whole big subject. Okay, anybody else? Yeah, I'm Lubak Maharaj.
Well, I had a question about something that you had mentioned at the early or the outset of the class. And before I do, I want to thank you very much for giving us a lesson in book distribution. Anyone who's having any difficulty or problems or trials knows how to overcome them. And Bhrigupati is the perfect person because he's had so much experience over so many years, and he can really help in that respect. What I'd like to speak about just very briefly, if possible, with all due respect to what you've mentioned at the outset of the class, in making a comparison between what is going on in the place that we are at the book, namely that what has happened for such as King Parikshit acting in a way which was completely contrary to his normal way of acting. His normal way of acting, of course, is to be very sober, to be very, very kind, to be very understanding, and not to become angry and upset and disturbed. And it's mentioned very clearly that this is done by the will of the Lord, and that is called yoga maya, when the Lord gets into the action to create a situation so that his purpose or his mission can be fulfilled. So if Parikshit had acted in his normal way, he would not have gotten angry. He would simply walked out, and that would have been the end of it. Okay? But what happened is he got angry. He walked out of the kutir, saw a dead snake, picked up the snake and threw it around the neck of Samyukta Rishi. And the door was open, and there were some friends of Samyukta Rishi's son who were looking at the king, what he did, which was put the snake around the neck of the sage. And so he went and he told Sringi, and Sringi then cursed Parikshit, and that's how we get the Bhagavatam got going. So this was all called yoga maya, when Krishna causes an individual to act in a way which is contrary to his ordinary way of acting, so that, as I said, the mission of the Bhagavatam would be fulfilled, and as you mentioned, Parikshit would go back home, back to Godhead. Okay, that's yoga maya. Then you mentioned also that this is the will of the God, the will of God, which is going on in this material world. And so I say absolutely not. And why absolutely not? Because this is going on under Mahamaya. The maya means illusion. One illusion is created by Krishna. The maya that is going on now is basically a result of individuals or souls who want to be lords. And because they want to be lords, they are sent into this world where they get an opportunity in one way or another to lord it over somebody, some way. So, and why do they want to do that? Because they think to be a lord will bring them happiness, will bring them satisfaction, will bring them fulfillment. But anything, the actual opposite is the truth, as we know. Mm-hmm. What happens is people become miserable. Krishna has given Mahamaya for the purpose to help these people fulfill their desires, and in the course of fulfilling their desires, they also become very miserable, as we have. All the miseries in this world are the result of going against the will of God. When they go with the will of God, as we are trying to do here, hello?
Yeah, it's okay.
As we are trying to do here, what happens is that our lives become more peaceful, more uplifted, more joyful, more satisfying in the long run. So here's the point that I'm coming to.
Okay.
And that is, it is what you said is like what's going on. It's not like. This is our choice. It's not the will of God.
Okay.
We choose. Let me finish.
Okay.
We choose to go and become lords, which is not what God wants. But if we want to do it, he provides a place where we can do it. Okay? And in doing it, we become miserable. The only will of the Lord is that he's allowing it to go on. And that's it. It goes on by our will. We want to be lords. The Lord doesn't want us to be lords. And because we want to be a lord, we get the result of that, which is endless types of sufferings and miseries. That's it. So what's going on right now in the book is pure Krishna consciousness. Parikshit is simply a surrendered soul, and he wants to be used by Krishna, and Krishna is using him to do the two things that we just mentioned a few moments ago. What's going on in the world is not what Krishna wants. What he wants is us to come back home, back to Godhead. And that's why he has people like Srila Prabhupada come into the world and give us the way, the method that we can do that. So,
What about Prabhupada getting inspired and coming and preaching Krishna consciousness?
I didn't interrupt you when you were speaking, did I?
Well, I was given the place.
Well, you can speak after I do.
Keep going, please.
So, anyway, the important point is that Mahamaya and Yogamaya are two different forms of illusion. And the one that's going on in the material world is Mahamaya. The one that's going on in this particular incident, or we can take another incident, we can have the incidents where the four Kumaras go up to the spiritual world, and then they meet they encounter a giant Vijay, and the four Kumaras curse them because they're hindered. That's out of character. The four Kumaras are considered one of the greatest, the most knowledgeable persons going. So that's a different circumstance, and it's one in which Krishna gets into the act or has a plan to get his devotees into the act. What's going on in this world is this: Krishna is simply allowing it to go on, and the only time he gets into it is when someone wants to get out of the misery, and getting out of the misery, he must go to someone who knows how to get us out of the misery. And that's where Srila Prabhupada comes in, and that's where all the books come in.
So I would concede the point. It wasn't a perfect analogy, okay? Mm-hmm. And I agree with everything you said, that this, what's going on in the Kali Yuga, that's Mahamaya. It's also under the control of Krishna. It's not outside Krishna's will, because everything that happens is part of Krishna's will. But I think it was enough of an analogy to make the point that what Prabhupada did, Prabhupada getting inspired and coming here to the West and getting people to become devotees and the devotees having an opportunity to participate, I think that's Yogamaya. I think that's all Yogamaya. So I think there was enough of an analogy there, despite the fact that I started off, with the material energy, it transforms into a pastime of the Lord. So I think there was enough there to make that analogy.
Srila Prabhupada coming in to the world, I have no disagreement. That is Yogamaya.
It's Yogamaya,
yes.
Right.
But what's going on in the world amongst people is Mahamaya.
I would agree.
They've come here for one reason, to become lords of some sort or another. And
no argument.
Krishna, I mean, that's self-control, control of speech, by the way.
Go ahead, please.
If I can't control the speech, I can't go on talking, okay? So the point I'm trying to bring out, and very clearly, is that Krishna provides this Mahamaya so that living entities who do not want to serve him can go on and serve themselves or their own ego, and by doing such, they can get the result. So Mahamaya is provided by Krishna, and in that sense, yes, Krishna, but that brings misery. Yogamaya ultimately brings happiness. We got the Bhagavatam, and we got King Pariksit going back home, back to Godhead. They are two different illusions. One brings you up, and the other brings you down. That's all I want to say.
Okay, thank you very much for the comment. And I agree with everything you have to say about Mahamaya. However, I do still feel it's a valid analogy. I still feel the analogy was valid, and it's not purely the same as what happened to Arjuna, what happened to Maharaj Prickett, but there's enough commonality there that I think it was a valid analogy, and it makes a similar point.
Okay.
That it's Yogamaya ultimately. Overall, it's a Yogamaya affair. What's going on? Lord Chaitanya's pastime, the Sankirtan movement in the material world. So I feel it's a valid analogy, but thank you. I appreciate your listening carefully enough to share those insights with us. Thank you. Rancho Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Yeah.